from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Patriots Monday on WEEI is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, McFarlane Energy, Shaw's and Star Market, Town Fair Tire, your New England Kubota dealers, and Drains by James.
Hour number two here, Boston Sports Original, WEEI. No Jones today here on Jones and Mega. You got me, Arkand, sitting in the big chair. And joining us right now on our WEEI hotline, two-time Super Bowl champion, number 31 in your programs, Mr. Jonathan Jones joins the program. Jonathan, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Going great. How was practice today?
It was good. It was good to be back out there and get to it. We got off day tomorrow, so it was good to wrap up today.
So, John, thanks for joining us, by the way. I want to ask about the way that the defense has been feeling since you found out that Matthew Judon was traded, and how much, I guess, what kind of void he's leaving that, you know, other guys are going to have to fill in terms of not just what he brings to the position on the football field, but in the locker room as somebody who is clearly a leader in that locker room in you.
Oh, I mean, it's going to be some big shoes to fill. I mean, like I said, from on the field, I mean, his impact that was left, but then also in the locker room. He was just a guy who you heard his voice a lot. You know, he was very outspoken. And then on the field, some big shoes to follow. But we have some guys that I think are ready to step up and fill into those roles. And as the season progresses, they're going to have to show that they're fit, you know, to do that.
Jonathan, as a leader on the team, I mean, you're one of the longest tenured players on the team. I think it's Cardona, Andrews, and you. So you're one of the guys I'm sure a lot of these younger players are looking up to. Guys like Christian Gonzalez, who had that promising rookie year before it was cut short. As someone who came into the league and joined the Patriots in the middle of their second dynasty, there was still sort of that Patriot way thing with Brady and Bill and all of that. How are you bringing along the new guys? What sort of responsibility do you put on yourself for doing that with this team?
I mean, a lot. I think I became that voice, you know, especially after Devin and Matthew retired. There was a void there to be filled. And just showing the guys what it means to be a veteran, what it means to be a guy in this league. And, I mean, the NFL is a tough league, you know, week in and week out. And winning in this league is hard. And just trying to show guys, you know, how that's done and what that looks like, you know, and having had some success in my career and just trying to show those guys what that looks like.
Now, Christian got off to a great start last year. Obviously, it was cut short by the injury. What have you seen from him so far as he tries to get back into that mode again and be as productive as he was to start last season?
I mean, yeah, he's having a great camp. I mean, him and a lot of the guys, the younger guys, are having a great camp. I mean, they're coming in every day working. He's making plays. And like you said, last year, I mean, it was a phenomenal start that he got off to. And I think he's looking to build off of that. And he has the confidence, he has the skill set, And I think it's going to be a good year for him as long as he can stay healthy and stay out there.
We know that Gerard Mayo is primarily a defensively minded coach as a head coach. How involved is he day to day and hands on, whether at practice or in meetings with the defense, is he right now compared to who he was last year when he was technically, I don't know, linebackers coach, but kind of de facto partial coordinator? And how's he work with DeMarcus Covington so far?
Oh, man, he always says he has to put on his head coach hat, even though he's a defensive guy. So he definitely has that that 3,000-foot view, overview of the team. Not as much, you know, hands-on with the defense. I think he loves to split his time both ways. And with DeMarcus being in the system for a few years and they having the same vision of how they want to run the defense, I think he has a lot of trust in D.C. to do that with the defense. And Mayo is just taking a bigger perspective of looking on both sides of the ball, having to deal a little bit with the offense as well.
Does the defense feel different to you so far in this training camp compared to last year and the year before?
I wouldn't say different. I mean, I think the foundation, I mean, even from, you know, Mayo, Coach Mayo, his foundation that he grew up in the system, you know, defensively. So schematically, it's, you know, it's relatively the same. But there's a lot of new change and turnover, like I said, within the guys that are in that locker room now on the defense. And so I definitely see it being a different, you know, different defense with different guys. But schematically, you know, it's the same. But the ability that this defense provides is for every coordinator that we've had. I mean, it's always kind of looked a little bit different. And so, you know, DC's going to have an opportunity to put his own spin on it.
Now, John, it seems like for the most part, people like us, reporters, everybody talks about the defense like you guys are going to be fine. You know, it's really the offense that everyone's worried about. You were there for the beginning of the Mac Jones experience, and you saw him his rookie year. You were there for that camp. As someone, you know, on the other side of the ball competing against them during these camps and during these practices, what similarities and differences would you say you're seeing now with Drake May?
I think what this league has taught me is to buckle my seatbelt and enjoy the ride. I mean, it's going to be ebbs and flows. That's the beauty of the NFL and his career. I think what's going to make Drake who he is as a quarterback is how he responds to adversity. You know, this league, you're going to have adversity. You're going to go through it. And I think, you know, for him, when his time comes, you know, right now it's Jacoby's time, but when his time comes, it's going to be about how he handles, you know, adversity, how he handles being the backup, how well he's learning, you know, behind Jacoby and taking advantage of those reps in practice so that when it does become his time, that he's ready to handle it.
Now, you and Jacoby entered the league at the same year, right? He was drafted in 2013. You were signed, or 2016, I should say. That's when you were signed as well. Now he's back on the team now. What have you seen in terms of his growth? He's been in all over the play with the Colts and all these other teams. What have you seen from him in terms of progression from the player he was, you two together as rookies, to who he is now?
Yeah, we laughed. We laughed when he got back, just saying, look where we came from. I mean, like you said, the growth, he's gone, learned other systems, you know, truly became a veteran in this league at quarterback, from a backup and also a starter in this league. I mean, he's progressed so much, you know, in his career. And we laughed that, you know, this is how the story has come along, with both of us coming in, him leaving and coming back. He's learned a lot, you know, and I'm excited to see, you know, how the season goes for him.
So there was a little bit of like notice on when you guys were starting training camp, little things like, hey, you guys have a players lounge now and you have practice starting a little bit later because you're going to meetings before that rather than the night before. How much do those day-to-day things so far in training camp and the preseason feel like a change in the culture down there driven by Gerard Mayo and the rest of the staff? Or is that even something that you guys notice?
No, it's definitely different. And for me, I've gotten kind of used to the same routine, you know, for 8+ years. And so it's definitely different. And those things, you know, some of the guys appreciate the little things. You know, football is still going to be football, the X's and O's. But when you get off the field in that department, I think he's done a good job of changing that culture for the guys, and especially a lot of the younger guys. They definitely appreciate that.
What's the biggest difference on the field, practice-wise, and, you know, joint practice and even the preseason games? What's the biggest difference on the field with Gerard Mayo there holding the clipboard as opposed to Bill Belichick?
Oh, man. I really couldn't pinpoint, you know, a finger difference, you know, as far as, you know, on the field. Just simply because, like I said, football is football. I think, you know, they both have very high standards, and that's the beauty of it. The standard is high. Gerard has the same standard of perfection from us. And so, you know, whether we're out there with him or in the past when it was Coach Belichick, the standards are very high. And so as a player, you notice that, you feel that. So it's, you don't have time to, you know, be lackadaisical out there. It's just pressure. And so Gerard does a good job of forcing that pressure on guys, letting guys know, you know, that, you know, this is a high-stakes business. And so he definitely does a good job of that.
The Patriots put out one of their mic'd-up videos of Jabril Peppers the other day. And I mean, I find him extremely entertaining, both in his style of play and the mic'd up, I think, back that up. Does he talk the most on defense, or is there somebody who's come in and kind of challenged him in that department?
I don't think anybody can talk more than Pep, man. He's a guy, you're going to hear him before you see him, but when you see him, you're definitely going to see him. I mean, it's awesome to have him out there flying around. His play matches his words. I mean, he's very energetic. You know, he flies around the field with relentless effort, you know, and we need guys like that on the defense. So, I mean, I enjoy having Pep out there every day.
All right.
Does he annoy anybody on the offense? Is anybody on the offense, like, it's one of these days when you're out there in pads and it's like a couple weeks ago when it was 97 degrees and it's like, seriously, Pep, like, what are you doing?
I think at this point, they just have to come with it because they know, like, that's what he's going to do. So either, you know, you beat his energy or you're just going to get ran over for the day, because, you know, that's just how he comes out there. So they definitely understand that that's who he is and they have to deal with it.
All right, Jonathan Jones, thanks so much for the time today. Great talking with you, and good luck this year.
Man, I appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
All right, that was Jonathan Jones, your starting corner. Start probably number one guy right there on the outside for your New England Patriots, part of that secondary and part of that defense that I feel like people, for the most part, are not super concerned with. I think that, you know, every positive, and there's not that many of them, but for the people, the prognosticators who are out there, the, you know, the Schatzes of the world and guys like that who think that the Patriots might surprise some people this year, it's really because of the foundation and the idea that this is a foundation defense. There's carryover from last year. They were good unit last year. You got a coach who was involved in that, and that's just something that's going to be able to run itself, and all the attention and everything has to be on the offense. And I'll tell you, he sounds confident. Like, Jonathan Jones sounds confident out there. You know, I was thinking that, I'm kicking myself now, asking him about some of these younger wide receivers that he's had to cover, but it doesn't seem like they've got him super worried. You know, like, he seems, and most of the guys, I heard Bentley earlier today with Gresham Fourier, or Gresham Hart, I should say, and they sound like things are going the way they're supposed to be. It's a lot less chaotic, I think, than the offense.
There's definitely some comfort in hearing him say that it's the same scheme that Bell ran, just different players in there and maybe a little bit of a different culture or approach from the coaching side, but that you have that continuity on that side of the ball because everything on the other side just seems to be an unknown or a complete mess so far.
Yeah.
So to have that continuity of the scheme on the one side of the ball, hopefully you can have somebody like Keon White be 75% of a Matthew Judon and figure out some of these other things with Christian Gonzalez and what seems like a little bit of a slip, like fall off over the last couple of weeks on reports from practice.
Got burned by Tyquan Thornton today.
He is a fast guy. He just doesn't stay healthy.
It's true. We'll see. We'll see how Gonzalez is looking. Jones said he's having a great camp. So, you know, maybe we're not seeing everything behind the scenes. But it did kind of look, I mean, like, he was locking down Tyreek Hill in those first month of the season last year. So maybe expectations for Gonzalez are a little high. Either way, we'll all find out together, I guess. Coming up here in a few minutes, right after Joe Braverman tells you what's trending, we'll talk to the starting quarterback. As of right now, Jones had something to say about that, too. It's Jacoby's time, he was saying. We'll talk to Jacoby Brissett at 3:30. But first, here's Joe Braverman with what's trending.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Follow the socials at Jones and Mego.
Check it out in the Jones and Mego page as well. You can vote in the big Q in 2 and then see Arcan's AI renderings of Mego bathing in a chicken pot pie with Marcus Park.
This is Jones and Mego on WEEI.
I would say that Jacoby has played in this league for a long time, and he has really earned the right, and I would say earned the respect of his teammates and also the coaches to go out there and move the ball. Now, in saying that, We came into the season, even like right after we drafted Drake at 3, with a plan, a development plan. And so sometimes I feel like, not that people are talking out of both sides of their mouths, but, you know, we talk about how he's developed here during training camp, but then also why isn't he playing? And so, like I said, we're going to stick to the plan. It may not be a popular plan, but we're doing what we think is right for the organization, not only in the near term, but also the long term.
That was Gerard Mayo this morning. Had a lot to say to Hillman and friends. I like how he said, you know, not to talk about both sides of our mouths here. It's like, come on. It's exactly what you've been doing. Why, and it was all day long today.
Why stop now?
I mean, really. Like, even just in the same interview, like, it's, well, the plan is we have a development plan and we're sticking to it and that's it. But also, it's an open competition, and Drake May could still win, and that could just totally blow up the entire plan, and we'll do it anyway. We'll just do whatever happens. We'll do whatever works. We don't know exactly what we're doing, is what it sounds like he's saying.
I want someone to try to get him to explain in a more explicit way what the competition is made of. Is the competition that Drake May has not earned his reps with the ones in practice yet? Is the competition based purely on what Drake May can show you in the third preseason game? Because otherwise, it sounds like the competition is just how we're feeling 10 days from now, and we don't really need to explain that.
It does seem like it jumps around a little bit, even from, like, you know, the morning to the afternoon. Sometimes the beginning of the interview to the end of the interview, it seems like the whole decision switches a little bit. There's other veterans right now that are starting ahead of young quarterbacks on other teams in the league. You look around, and some of them are in good situations, some of them aren't. Gardner Minshew just won the starting job in Vegas over Aiden O'Connell, and Antonio Pierce comes out.
How would you describe that situation?
He comes out, and he's like, I'd like to say that this was a good competition and that these guys both really showed us the best, but that's not really what happened. And it's like, oh, great. So one guy just sucked a little less, huh? Is that what you're saying? Like, usually you try and spin that in a way, but Pierce isn't interested in doing that.
He's, like, negging his quarterbacks.
Kind of is, yeah. That's some pretty hard nag.
You know what you need to do is earn some praise from me in front of everybody.
That's true. The shoe is going to be the starter there, I guess, by default. You have the Russell Wilson, Justin Fields situation out in Pittsburgh, which it seems like Wilson's ahead right now, although I think I saw Orlovsky talking about they should have Fields be the starter. I think Wilson's probably his job to lose. And that's a team with a good O-line and good receivers and just sort of a better structure, I would say, there for either a rookie or a veteran, no matter who it is. And then there's Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix. And I think I heard Raheem Morris say that they're not going to play Penix in this last game. They're not going to play him in the last preseason game. They know he's going to be the backup. They know Cousins is going to be the starter, but they're just going to keep him out of the game, which makes me wonder if maybe Penix was really good, you know, like maybe he's too good and now all of a sudden they don't want a competition because they paid Cousins all that money. And then there's Jacoby Brissett and Drake May. And Jacoby Brissett, who we will talk to here in just a few minutes, he'll be joining the program, so we'll get his take on this up front. There's veterans starting ahead of young quarterbacks. I feel like, oh, whenever that situation is the case, and especially when it's a high draft pick, someone that they invested, you know, heavy draft capital into, you're always sort of looking over your shoulder, right? Like, I have the job now, but we know it's temporary. We know that the plan for the team is eventually to get this guy in here and have him do it. And I sort of wonder for even someone like Brissett, who in the course of his career has been in this position before and has also been, you know, a starter before when things don't work out that way, if this is sort of a different situation, if he looks at what's going on here in New England, the plan that they have for Drake May, and how he sort of fits into it, which we'll all find out about.
A different situation from what, though?
Different situation from maybe
his past?
Him with, you know, Andrew Luck in Indy or something, you know? Like, I just feel like there's a different, it's a different understanding. Like, with Luck, you know, that was a guy who was considered the number one can't miss blue chip prospect ever. And with Drake May, I just feel like they're treating it differently. It's a different sort of thing. And Brissett's role is less one of, all right, you're just going to be the backup for the kid and you're going to teach him and hold the clipboard and all of that. Now it's, no, you're going to be the starter. You're going to be the guy that, you know, is in charge of this. And we'll eventually bring him along. And if it doesn't work out, then you're going to stay the starter. Like, that's sort of, that seems like a different thing than what it was with Andrew Luck.
I agree. I guess I just think for where he is in his career, I'm interested in asking him how it was detailed to him when he signed here.
Mm.
And I don't know how transparent he can be with something like that, but I think it's worth asking about, did you come into this situation knowing that it was going to be a competition from the jump? From basically minicamp and OTAs? Or did you come into it under the idea that you were going to be the starting quarterback this year until something changed dramatically?
Yeah. You know, I'd say that's a real possibility.
The expectations that they set with him will dictate completely. Look, I think he's a pretty stand-up guy. So I think when they're in the quarterback room, he's not going to ice out somebody because he's not the starting quarterback anymore, or he's not going to help the team along. That's never who he's shown himself to be.
Yeah.
But I could understand, depending on how the expectations were set, that it could be a harder pill to swallow or not.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Especially
by the way,
if something changed drastically in this week and next week.
Sure. And I'm looking it up right now, and I was off on the time that he was there and when Luck was there. Luck was 2012. By the time we got to 2018, and you had Brissett over there, Luck was almost on the way out. I think they did play together 1 year, and 1 year he was hurt and missed the whole season. And then I think after that, he was done. He retired in 2018. So I think that was, or 2019, whatever it was. So I think that's maybe not an exact apples-to-apples comparison here. But he has been in, you know, these situations before where he has sort of a nebulous role. And it's like, all right, your role is going to kind of change here. It's going to become one thing, and maybe it'll change into something else. And that's just, you know, when you're a team that's looking at the starting quarterback and thinking, all right, your role is going to be very nebulous and may change over time, then you're generally in a rebuild. I mean, that's usually what that means, and that's what we're dealing with right now. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. How confident are you in the Drake May development plan right now, Mega?
So it's hard to say when there's no indication of what the plan is. So far, the only thing that I can read from the plan is that they seem to be bringing him along incredibly slowly and just putting a little bit more on his plate each week. But it's hard to even measure that when you can say, are they putting more on his plate by saying, hey, Drake, what plays do you like? What are you comfortable with? As he detailed to us in talking with Alex Van Pelt last week. Or because it's not as big as, hey, you're going to get to go practice with the ones. And that's what's frustrating for me is, what does he have to show you more for him to at least get the opportunity to play with the first line guys? And is that something that we're going to see, or that is going to be seen at all this summer? Are they waiting for the point where the media is no longer at the entirety of practice? because I believe that switches over this week.
Is that right? Yeah, okay. That makes
so
sense.
Basically what happens is the beat reporters, the people who are down there day to day.
Don't they have that one big scrimmage for the season ticket holders and then that's it? And then the...
Well, they already had the season ticket holders practice.
That already happened?
Yes.
Okay.
That happened 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
So they go down and they'll basically, they'll have, hey, here's the guy stretching. And then they might go through some one-on-one drills and, you know, basically like calisthenics, like agility work for the receivers and stuff like that. And then boop, your access is done. Now you go write whatever you want to write about that day.
Yeah.
And wait for the availabilities to happen right after practice or whatever.
Unless Brissett wants to be really different from Bill Belichick.
Oh, you mean Mayo?
Unless Mayo wants to make everyone very different, you know?
I wouldn't anticipate that.
I don't think so.
That drastically. But that my point in that is saying is that, okay, so maybe they bring in him to play with the ones, Drake May to do some reps with the ones when the media can't see it. So there's a little bit less expectation that's being drummed up. But even if he is, then that's going to get out one way or another.
Yeah, probably. I think that they should be less worried about what's getting out and more about, you know, who's getting a real shot at being in position to be the better player and lead this team forward. Because I think that, you know, ultimately, whatever you think about May and how far he's coming along and Brissett and what he's looked like so far, I think that, you know, there's sort of the plan that fans are looking at. And then there's the bigger picture here, which is that, you know, we heard Kraft talk about this. And I'm not sure how many games we're going to win this year. Like, that's not...
the division's really strong.
It's a very strong division. I mean, it is. You know, you look around and you know that it is. Even with Diggs leaving the Bills, you know, you still have a strong AFC East here. And the Patriots team that, while we'd like to see them compete in it, I think that there's a different plan for this season. There's a different sort of set of expectations. I don't think that you're going to be hearing about winning playoff games anytime soon or about how that's, you know, a big part of this anymore. I think that this is really just to sort of build something. And I think they just could have done a much better job of setting a foundation to put a quarterback on top of. That's never going to sit right with me. Unless they really shock everyone and win a bunch of games this year, I think that's something that I'll always look back on and just be annoyed by. Like, it didn't have to be like this, you know?
Right. I think we spent so much time in free agency talking about the ability to go get Calvin Ridley. And even just very recently, it was the trade proposal that they put forward for Brandon Ayuk. But the big thing is to go back to what we started the show with, the offensive line, and that you didn't have a left tackle and you got somebody in the draft and you told us that Mike Onwenu might play tackle over there. And it just feels like the thing that is supposed to be, to use your word, the foundation for the quarterback is being treated like such an afterthought. And you've been through this before. You went through this last year. It was almost the same conversation last year, except the difference was talking about whether Trent Brown was going to make his weight clause by the end of training camp and if you could properly motivate him or if you had to get Scar on the phone to yell at him.
I miss
really
Scar.
Just,
don't you miss Scar?
Of course, but it's really just it's iterations of the same conversation, like different versions of the same conversation that you're having. And for me, that is, if you're going to knock Elliot Wolf on anything, like, I've seen people knock him about the way that he talks to the media, about how he expresses himself, how he talks around everything, whether you think that he should have traded Matthew Judon or not. To me, the biggest knock against him is just the failure to come up with more guys to play at that tackle position in a meaningful way.
What do you want me to do?
in a meaningful way for the offensive line.
Yeah. Elliot Wolf talking about his whole press conference, I thought, and Ben Volen wrote about this today. Volen, I think, was a lot tougher on him than I was. And I know
he didn't agree with a lot of the things that he said. I'm going to say that.
All right. Well, what part? Just for the record, his the article was, it's hard to have much confidence in the Patriots when Elliot Wolf doesn't project it. And he talked about Wolf's press conference and how he didn't seem particularly confident in anything and that it was very short and they cut it off after just 7 or 8 minutes and that, you know, he didn't really have much in terms of like spin for the more obvious deficiencies on the team. You didn't like that?
I didn't like it. I thought he was a little bit unusually harsh on the guy. What did
Volen
he call
was.
Him? Yeah, Volen called him a mouse at some point.
Ooh.
Like he projected
no,
as
he
like
didn't.
A little mouse or something like that. I'm trying to find it in front of me. Oh, here it is. Elliot Wolf, who took over the front office from Bill Belichick, was like a frightened mouse Sunday when taking questions from reporters for the first time since April's NFL draft. Now, I wasn't there, but I watched the video. And I did watch him get pressed by Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal about the offensive line.
Boom. Roasted.
And whether he did enough to put in support for a young quarterback like Drake May or the de facto starting quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. And I thought that Wolf pushed back on that. Now, whether or not he believes in it, I wouldn't say that he just like cowered and didn't want to answer it. I thought that was a little ridiculous. And furthermore, Volin argues with himself in this column. He says that he's talking around Drake May starting, and then he says that's probably the right way to talk about it. And it's like, well, do you want him to be transparent and honest with you about how he feels about the roster that he built, or do you want him to be diplomatic and talk around it? I agree with something that you said before the show, though, Arcan, which is he was much better in the booth that preseason game.
Yeah.
I thought he was way more relaxed.
Yeah, when he was talking to the McCourties and Zoe in the booth, it was halftime of that Eagles game. I thought he seemed like pretty well in control. Like he seemed comfortable behind the microphone. It seemed like he was, you know, just out there talking and saying things that were not groundbreaking or anything, but just the way he talked and his cadence and everything just sort of sounded like a guy who was a little bit more in control of things. Like, and when he was up there for the press conference, it seemed like he was a little less sure of himself.
He's a nerd.
Yeah.
What do you think? He's a front office guy. These guys are all nerds. Like, what do we expect? That he's going to get up there and he's going to be having zingers? And would you even like that? Then it would be,
No, he doesn't have to have zingers.
He doesn't take it seriously. He's coming off like he doesn't get it.
Okay, when he's asked about the offensive line and he says, well, we're concerned about every position, you know?
Right, that's like, a Bill-ism.
That's a Bill-ism for
sure.
That's
him trying to do the Bill
thing.
There
was some Bill cosplay going on in here, I think, too.
He was very aloof.
They said, well, the Patriots keep four quarterbacks. We're going to try and carry the best 53, whoever those guys are, really? So you're going to have 10 quarterbacks? Come on.
That would be wild.
It would be weird. And the stuff about being third on the waiver claim order, being excited about the young receivers, and that's why we didn't get Brandon Ayuk. Really? Then why did you go that far down the road, get the framework of a deal, and then promise to pay him $30 million a year? Because you're excited about your young wide receivers? Or is it because, you know, you need help in that room, and that's why you pursued him that far, and now you're trying to spin it. Like, that's that.
We're going to try to carry the best 53, whoever those guys are.
Okay, great. That's terrific. Whoever that is, don't care. They can play any position, be kickers and punters. We're going to carry the best 53.
Issue has to do with the expectation. What were you expecting from him? What did you think that he was going to say that was going to, you know, change your mind about this team? Do you think that he was going to say, get up there and say, you know what we see through training camp right now? We got real steel in Javon Baker. You guys haven't seen fully what this guy's going to be capable of doing. If he gets up there and makes grand proclamations like that, then he's pigeonholing himself.
I guess, but he could also, you know, with the offensive line in particular, he says we have the pieces in place to be able to compete. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's not really any way to spin it because it's his roster.
I wouldn't even say you have those pieces in place.
I think you have three pieces in place. You have 3 to 4 pieces in place that can compete.
Yeah, but you might need one of those pieces to move over to tackle.
It's true. Yeah, that's a good
point. The pieces are not in place.
617-779-7937.
I'm just saying, don't say he's like a cowering mouse or a frightened mouse.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's a little excessive, but I didn't think
he was
particularly sure of himself. He didn't seem very sure of himself.
I thought he seemed sure of himself when he was clapping back at Bedard. Even if he was wrong, he was still, like, holding his ground there a little bit.
He's trying to. All right, let's go to the phones here. I think we're getting ghosted by Jacoby Brissett. Is that what's happening here? Or is it a fadeaway?
They just said they're running late.
Running late. That's what they always
say. Very busy day.
Right before they ghost.
Trying to cram in a bunch of stuff before the day off.
Let's go to Brandon in Boston while we wait. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
What's up?
You know, Drake May is a rookie. There shouldn't be no rush for him to be on the field. This is Jacoby Brissett's job to lose. He's only here on a one-year deal. So Drake May should just be learning everything he can under this man. And the only way I play Drake May is if there's a failing season and they have no chance of making the playoffs. That's when you throw him in.
Okay.
Then the next season, he'll be the guy to lead.
All right, thanks, Brandon. We got to let you go here because joining us now, once again, on the WEEI hotline, the starting quarterback as of right now for your New England Patriots, Mr. Jacoby Brissett, joins the show. Jacoby, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Sounded like you had a nice practice today. I heard you had a nice bomb there to Tyquan Thornton. How was everything feeling out there in the practice field this afternoon?
I thought we had a great day. Ending training camp on the right note. I thought the guys came out with good energy. We had a hard practice yesterday, so everybody could have easily fell in the tank, and I think we answered the ball. And you know, I think we all went out there and performed well, and our energy was up. So I think guys definitely answered the call today.
Thank you for joining us, Jacoby. I want to ask you if you can describe Alex Van Pelt's approach with this offense, because We don't know a whole lot about him other than everyone you talk to says he's just this great guy. But how different is his approach from even the last time that you were in Foxborough with the Patriots?
I mean, the good thing about AVP is he's the same guy every day. You know, he's a like everybody, when you talk about AVP, you got to start with he's a great man. You know, he's somebody that everybody wants to play for. And I think that's what gets you out of bed in the morning to that you know you're going to play for somebody that, you know, doing it the right way. So you got to start there. But I think he's doing a good job of he has a system in place, and now he's trying to figure out where all these guys and how we're going to play football this year, how we all kind of coexist with each other. And I think he's doing a good job and mixing it up as far as putting different guys in different positions and giving other guys to shine opportunities to shine and things like that. To see how this thing unfolds when we put our product on week at a time, and because I know those our identity it may change a little bit as far as us because of how AVP is going to construct our offense to attack other defenses.
So, Jacoby, you were obviously started your career here getting drafted by the Patriots. You were in around the Colts, the Browns, Miami Dolphins, all these other places to come back and land in New England here under a new regime. Had to have been a weird experience for you. How did you sort of navigate that coming back home to the place that drafted you and that would be so different now?
I mean, just being fortunate. I mean, I'm going into my ninth year in the league, so I've been fortunate to be around a lot of good people, a lot of good – having a lot of different opportunities presented my way throughout my career and being able to, you know, kind of, you know, stay with it through how my career has gone. And obviously was fortunate enough to have this opportunity to come back. And it's obviously under a different regime with Mayo and those guys. And but with AVP and having that relationship and building that trust with one another that, you know, I was definitely fired up to come in and play for him again.
Jacoby, when you started negotiating with the Patriots in the offseason about returning to Foxborough, how detailed was the plan that they presented you with in the quarterback room? Did they tell you that it was going to be a competition with another quarterback, or was there a different plan in place where you would be the starter? I'm just wondering what those conversations were like.
I mean, in this league, it's a competition every year, no matter to play in this league. So it was just two guys in a room, I think, at a time. But I mean, it's like I said, it's competition every year, every day. So they that was kind of like the unwritten, like they didn't have to tell me. I already, you know, kind of knew the writing on the wall. And then it was just about me just feeling comfortable with where this organization was trying to go. And I was, so I was definitely excited for that.
So when you came into the league, there were two quarterbacks ahead of you on the roster here in New England. One of them was Tom Brady, obviously the veteran, and you and Jimmy were the two young guys. Now you're the Tom Brady of the offense in every possible way, of course. Was it like sort of having him as the figure to sort of look up to and take you under his wing? And now how have you taken those lessons and applying them to your relationship now with Drake May?
I mean, Tom was a great teammate, you know, and he was everything you wanted in somebody to if you wanted to bring a young guy in and kind of emulate the way he went about his business and how he prepared and things like that. Like, he was the ideal person for that. And, you know, I was fortunate to have him be a part of my career. And, you know, I think the thing that with Tom was he was always a good teammate. So, you know, I'll try to like start there and then kind of figure out everything else as far as like how to help somebody. But I think Tom being just such a good teammate, not only to myself, but I know to a lot of other guys, that it definitely helped, you know, the transition as you get into the league and learning how to be a professional. And you learn from the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. So I was definitely fortunate to have that.
Jacoby, you're playing with a lot of young guys on defense, particularly at the receiver position. Thinking of Baker and Polk and even someone like Pop Douglas, who's coming back from last year. Who out of that group of young guys on offense has surprised you the most as the strides that they've been able to make through training camp?
Surprise? I don't think I wouldn't say surprise is the right word. It's just like I've definitely been impressed with a lot of the, you know, the way that a lot of those young guys retain information in that room and kind of put it on display, like from taking the classroom to the field. So that's been the most, impressive thing for that group. You know, obviously them learning a new offense and being around a new system. I think a lot of those guys have helped a lot of each other. I know you talk about like Pop and you talk about guys like Polk and Baker, and then you got guys who've been in the league for a couple years and Taquan and Reed and, and KJ and Booty and those guys. And I think they've all just done a really good job of kind of, you know, stringing each other along and helping each other out when guys go through tough phases. And I think the room as a whole has been very impressive as far as picking up the information as far as being a new offense.
All right. Now, Jacoby, I'm a big fan of you as a football player, obviously, but about 5 years ago, the summer of 2019, I became an even bigger fan when you went on your Twitter spree of asking weird questions to people on Twitter. It was the summer of 2019, and I noticed, I went back to check your feed, and you don't really tweet that much anymore. What can we do to get you back on Twitter asking those questions again?
Man, I'm honestly not like a big social media person. Obviously, if you know that year, it was like kind of like pre-COVID and all that stuff. But that's why I was stuck in the house and me and my friends were talking all the time. But I'm not a big social media person, so it'll be hard to get me back onto that.
You were very good on Twitter. I mean, it was very good stuff. It was thought-provoking questions.
Oh, for sure. I definitely had fun with it. I'm part of a group of my friends. We all ask those type of questions, like dumb questions while we're sitting on a bus or something like that, or in between work, and we just used to ask stupid questions like that, but it's hard to get you back on any social media right now.
Okay, well, while we're on stupid questions, I did go through the 21 questions, and not that they were stupid, but I'm about to toss you a stupid one. The questions that you answered from Alexandra Francisco of Patriots.com, and one of the questions was, she asked you what one of your non-negotiables rituals before games were, and you said that a non-negotiable is you do not use public restrooms. So I have two parts to this question. When did you commit to this lifestyle? And secondly, how do you define a public restroom?
So I committed to this when I first started using a restroom, when I was potty trained, because I don't think I can remember the last time I was in a public restroom that I had to use it. I mean, a public restroom is anything outside of my house or somebody that I'm really comfortable with, like at their house, which is very rare, which is probably, one of my best friends whose house that I used to kind of like live at. But other than that, it's probably, I'll just wait to go at a hotel or when I get home.
You get off the plane after a long flight and you don't make a beeline for that bath. That's unbelievable to me. I feel like that's one of the best usages of the bathroom you can have.
No, but it's like if I get at a hotel is fine. I trust the hotel cleaners. But other than that, like especially when like one of my biggest pet peeves is we get to the stadium right when we get off the bus and guys just beeline for the bathroom. Like, did you not have 3 hours before you like this before we got on the bus to use the bathroom? Like, should not smell this bad. So I just refrain from going in there.
You know what? This is why he's a good quarterback. He's got good bladder control. You know, that's why it's hard. You can't teach that.
Preparation.
Right.
Preparation
is key. Yeah. Preparation, of course.
I think about those things.
Very good. Well, Jacoby Brissett, thank you so much for the time today. Great talking with you, and we'll talk to you again soon. Good luck this weekend.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
All right. That's Jacoby Brissett as de facto right now starting quarterback for your New England Patriots, non-user of public restrooms. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We'll take a quick break and be right back after this.
Jones and Mego.
I never said I could take on hippo.
No, in fairness, you did.
With Arcand.
You ever see a hippo eat a watermelon? It's amazing.
On Boston Sports Original.
I wonder what Arcand just does with his time.
I watch hippos eating watermelons.
WEEI.
2-2 pitches cranked to deep right field. Abreu turns around and watches it fly. Home run, Gunnar Henderson, for the fourth time in the last 5 days. Got a 2-2 curveball, and he makes it 4-0 Baltimore with one down in the sixth.
I just don't know how many times Red Sox relievers want to throw bad spin at Gunnar Henderson in this ballpark. I mean, he's hot. You miss a chance to turn a double play. I mean, that is just an absolute hanger in the middle of the plate, and Henderson has shown what he can do with that.
Woof, Red Sox. This is tough. tough watching this happen to this team. I was hoping it wouldn't be quite so pronounced in the second half, but man, despite splitting with Baltimore, it's not like they had a terrible series there. They took 2 out of 3 from the Texas Rangers and split 2-2 in Baltimore with the Orioles and still now find themselves even further out of that wild card than they were going into the series now at 3.5 games back. Kansas City has won 4 straight. They just aren't letting up at all. And the Red Sox, unfortunately, for whatever reason you want to attribute it to, right now it seems like every single time a reliever comes into a game, he gives up a home run, like immediately. Bailey Horn comes right into the game, and it was a decent start by Crawford. Not his best ever, but pretty good. And here comes Bailey Horn, and boom, first bat. It's like, you know, it wasn't the first pitch, but first batter, and it's gone. It seemed like that happened all weekend. Every time a reliever came into the game, it seems like they were just giving up taters left and right. And that sucks the most because that's the one thing they addressed at the deadline. The one thing that they actually addressed at the deadline, and it's not working, obviously, with these guys, but they went out and they made some moves. They made a move for an 8th-inning guy. They made a move for another reliever. It seemed like that's something they were shoring up. It was falling apart right away from that Dodgers series right on through, you know, right after the All-Star break ended. I mean, you were sort of looking at that and thinking, man, like, this team really needs to get its act together. And they addressed it, and it just hasn't mattered. The offense has been good. Starting pitching's been a lot better. Bayo's been good. Crawford was good last night. You're seeing good starts from these guys. And this bullpen has just gone from what I thought was one of the strengths of the team now to such a massive liability that it's knocking this team out of playoff contention.
Yeah, and it's just something like that where you can split with one of the best teams in baseball in Baltimore. It's not enough. It's not good enough. It's kind of unfair because the way that you're constructed and the way your season has gone, you're in such a tight race for that final wild card position. And so it's just a series like this when all of a sudden and you see what the Royals are doing and it's somebody you're in direct competition with and then you slip down and it feels like this is how it's going to go for the rest of the season. And I don't say that to like troll Red Sox fans. It's just what I expected. We had a question a couple weeks ago. Do you think that they'll be back in that wild card spot at any point in the rest of the season?
Will they ever occupy it again? Right, yes.
I don't really think so. I think they're going to dance close to it several different times, and they're going to have another good series in them. They're going to maybe take 2 out of 3 against another good team. But it's the same thing that we've seen with these previous series. They're winning a lot of these series, and a split against the Orioles should feel like a win for most teams like the Red Sox at this point in the season.
Treading water, you're not losing any
ground. But it's because of the state of your bullpen and because of how tight that race is for the third wild card spot in your division, you're just kind of screwed.
Yeah.
You had to be perfect.
And
I mean, you really had to be like almost perfect in a lot of these series. And I think that's asking too much of the club.
It's definitely asking too much of this group. You're leaving out one big piece of this. And it's something that we both agree on and we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. All these other teams made a real effort at that deadline. They went out there, the Orioles went out
there and
got
shop.
Starting pitching. I mean, they went, not just starting, but top of the line starting pitching. One of those starting pitchers smoked you on Friday. You know, like you went out and addressed things and you traded for a couple of relievers that people weren't super familiar with, and it's better than doing nothing. I'll at least give you that. But you're competing with teams like Kansas City, like Baltimore, like Houston, who's won 9 out of 10, and they're just steamrolling over everybody, including you, and you got to start a series with them tonight. Good luck there. It just seems like, you know, they didn't take the deadline as seriously as some of these other teams did. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, you know, if you think you're good enough that you don't need to, fine. They didn't think that. They knew that they needed help. And they were just going about it like they always do. As well, you know, we got some guys coming back from injury. We'll go out and make a couple of moves. That's not the way other teams treated this deadline. Teams that were already better than you to start with. And some maybe that weren't. I don't know that the Royals were necessarily a better roster, but they are now. And that's all sort of just playing out the way you'd expect it to. When one team or several teams take the deadline seriously and you don't. 617-779-7937. There's the phone number. Coming up, we'll reset on our big Q at 2. Which position group are you most concerned about on Elliott Wolf's roster? He had a lot to say over the weekend, Wolf did, and we'll get to your phone calls as well at 617-779-7937, reacting to Jonathan Jones and Jacoby Brissett, both of whom we spoke to earlier on in the program. That's all coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.